Oh man, I'm fired up today. What's up everyone? It's Dean Somerset here with the Dean Somerset Podcast. I just got off the phone with a really great interview with Jeff Halaby, the CEO of HLVY Group and Halaby Life. He's a personal training manager and gym owner in New York City. He's also been on the Today Show as a fitness correspondent. He's got an internationally syndicated TV show, Workout From Within, and a whole bunch of different really cool business ideas that he's got floating around and doing some really amazing stuff in the fitness industry. So I wanted to chat with him and see what drives him, what makes him tick, find out what kind of successes he's had, any kind of failures, and see what kind of life lessons he's able to provide to everyone. I really got a lot out of this. I think you will too. Some of the big things that I took away from it, which you're going to listen to in a little bit, is what are some of the driving things that get Jeff to accomplish some of the big successes he's had in his life, his core values that he approaches his life with, what his business is like, what he looks for when he's hiring different people, and we also talk about Canada, because Canada's a pretty cool thing. So I think you're going to like this. I think you're going to get a lot out of it. Sit back, relax, get ready to go on a big joyride of fun and awesomeness, and let's get into it.
All right!
Coming to you from the frozen tundra deep inside the basement of champions.
Canada!
The Dean Somerset Podcast.
Woohoo! Beer! Let's go!
And now, the man who puts the FU in functional training. Here he is, Dean Somerset. What's up, everyone? It's Dean Somerset here with the Dean Somerset Podcast. Today, I got a good friend and special guest on, Jeff Halaby. He's a former fitness correspondent with NBC's Today Show. He's a star of the internationally syndicated Workout From Within, which airs in over 30 countries. He's the CEO of HLVY Group, which owns Halaby Life, which is a luxe gym in New York City. And also, he's just an all-around good dude and likes to deadlift and lift heavy things. So I just wanted to have him on today to talk about different stuff. Jeff, say hi to everyone.
What's up, and what's up, Dean?
Hey, man, it's just another day in paradise. It's above freezing at Edmonton, so I can't really complain.
I like how, like, the likes to lift heavy stuff came all the way at the end. And I do appreciate, because, like, I would say that it's probably the primary thing. You know, that's, like, my main driver and everything in life. I feel like I'm always lifting something heavy, whether it's on the gym floor or just, like, businessman. You know, life can be heavy.
The metaphorical heavy lifting, I tell you.
Exactly.
I was planning on saying that as a lead-in, you know, he likes to cuddle puppies and long walks on a beach, but kayaking on a lake in Lake Louise is always a good option too, right?
That's absolutely true. So beautiful. You know, I gotta tell you, when I was up in Canada, I'm in there, dude.
Yeah. It is a true paradise that a lot of Americans don't realize, which is kind of the way we like it. We like it to be a little bit less populated and just more awesome.
This is a crazy side stat that, like, I learned when I was up there, is that the population of California is actually greater than the total population of Canada.
Yep. Yeah.
That's mind-blowing to me.
And in terms of land mass, we're bigger than the United States by like 1.6 or 1.8 or something like that. So we're twice the size, but with like 1/10 of the population.
Well, you're bigger in land mass, but I will still always think of Canada as America Junior.
Yeah, but you know, we're bigger and we're on top. So, I mean, if this was Oz in prison.
Oh, here you go. There.
All right, so let's get back on track with this. You've been training in New York City for a long time. How long have you been training or working or owning a gym in New York?
Damn, it's been a really long time, which is weird because at the ripe old age of 25, it means I started when I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
I've been doing this a long time. I've been doing it in New York City now for almost 15 years.
Wow.
You know, going to independent trainer tracks or the health club track. I worked at Crunch like way back in the day. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a partner in another gym. I was an independent trainer, you know, doing the 4 a.m. to 9 p.m. grind, you know. It's been a while.
Yeah, New York's kind of a dog-eat-dog kind of cutthroat environment to be in to begin with. What do you see being different about New York compared to anywhere else in terms of fitness industry stuff?
You know, the interesting thing about, well, first of all, I got to say that qualitatively, and this is a big generalization, but I think it's just the sheer number of people that you have in New York City and the number of people who actually want to try living in New York at some point in time, even though I always try to dissuade them. You know, we have interns this summer and they're from outside of New York City and they want to move here. I'm like, why? You know, like I'm headed in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
But I think that from a qualitative standpoint, New York is awesome just because we have so many people here. So we attract a lot of great talent. So I would say that in general, the training community in New York is pretty kick-ass because you have a lot of people, who just want to, have a goal of actually living here. So we have, look, even here at Halavy Life, like I recruit from all over the country. I mean, I literally have, moved people from Iowa. I've moved people here from Virginia. So I'd say that New York City has a very high quality level. In terms of competition, look, it's like any other major city where you got a lot of people. There's more than enough money to go around. So I hate when I meet someone who's in the training community, and very often they ask for advice and how to get started and how they can what did I do in order to sort of get to the point where I grew to have my own gym and all that other stuff. And then they go on to say how like, oh, that it's really tough to get people. And they'll talk about how, the health clubs are, getting all the money. Or if that's the way you're thinking, then that's the way it's always going to be. Trust me, there's more than enough money in the world to go around. I think the actual stat is that if we were to divvy up the world's wealth equally, every person on earth would have $1 million of liquidity. Think every single person on earth. I mean, it's mind-blowing. But that's how much money is out there. And then when you're in a place like New York City that has a lot of high income and high net worth individuals who, have the discretionary income to pay for your services. I mean, it's like it should be like shooting fish in a barrel here if you're good. If you can actually deliver value, it's a great market to be. In other markets, it's just not that way. I think it's actually tougher. People think like New York is tough. Like you said, it's like dog eat dog. It can be a bit cutthroat. Sure, it can be like that. It's like that everywhere you go. But the thing is, you also have probably a bigger prospect base here than you do anywhere else too.
True. I mean, you could walk three blocks and pass a million people in that three block walk, right? Just based on the fact that the population density is so high.
That's exactly why I want to get out of here.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I love New York City, but I can only tolerate it for short periods of time. Like, I like having an office, a downstairs gym, and all that kind of stuff. But I appreciate anyone who can make a go of it while you're there. You said that there's a lot of high quality trainers there, but we both know that there's a lot of pseudo celebrity trainers that live in New York City too. That they tend to get their they get their message heard a lot easier because they have a louder voice or a better publicist or something like that. How do you typically deal with stuff like that? I know you've gone back and forth with a few people before, but what do you see going on when some of the less known or less qualified trainers have a louder voice?
Are we talking about Tracy Anderson? Are you baiting me to go there?
We could talk about her if you want, but I'm sure that there's others. Like, I mean, there's
everybody who's listening or watching. You have to know that Dean and I have like, it's almost like this. It's a weird bond where like we can have a whole conversation where I just go Tracy Anderson, yeah, and then he Tracy Anderson, and we just toss it back and forth, and we don't even have to say anything else. It's just funny to us. But I very publicly took her on back in 2012. Here's the thing. I think that I don't necessarily encourage anybody else to do this, by the way. I don't know why I do it. I think that, look, a lot of what I stand for and what Halavy Life stands for and is actually our mission statement is – our mission statement is raise the bar, and I'm all for raising the bar. And I know it's a little cheeky because of the industry that we're in, but I believe in setting a higher standard for yourself, for others, and for our industry. And when you look at the folks out there like Tracy Anderson or some of these, now with Instagram, like, you have your Insta celebs, in the fitness, space. And these guys are total hacks. And you have to, I think that you have to use your voice to protect people if you're comfortable doing so. So I see what Tracy Anderson does as being harmful. So it's not even that she's just wrong. It's that what she's advocating is detrimental to one's health if you actually follow her protocol and listen to her. I can't even call it pseudoscience because it's like, something that would come out of my niece, my three-year-old niece's mouth. I mean, it's just completely made up, you know? Yeah. So all she says, she has an army of scientists behind her, which I've never seen. So, yeah. or nobody else has ever seen. But I challenged her, look, this going back, I think it was like 2011 or 2012. I challenged her to a debate at the 92nd Street Y, which is like this big venue here in New York City, $1 million to the winner's charity, based on debate of the scientific validity of the Tracy Anderson method. So at first she bit, and then very quickly backed down. I don't know why. I mean, I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of all started then. And then, you know, look, I've jawed, you know, I think I do it a lot less now, but I've jawed a bit over the years about some of the folks out there that I think are just stealing from people. And there are people, look, I'm sure you've seen trainers training someone else. And like the hardest thing to do is bite your tongue and not say something when they're doing something that potentially injures someone, or like they're babysitting or doing stuff that's just what I consider to be theft. You know, people are hiring us to make them better through informed, you know, scientific programming. And when you show up without a program, or, you know, you're reading the newspaper, whatever it is, you're just a thief, you know? So I can't remember what the question was, but I remember because I get so sidetracked with Tracy Anderson, man. She's still grinding my gears.
Well, part of it was just like, obviously there's a lot of TV shows on trainers that come out of New York City. Like I think Workout, what was the reality one that just happened a little while ago? It was all like the reality.
I was asked to be on that show and we turned it down for a variety of reasons. But most of which is like, I don't want to ever be considered, like years ago, you know, back in like 2008, 2009, 2010, you know, I made a name for myself being a celebrity trainer. Mm-hmm. And I don't like being referred to that way at all. I don't think it really says much, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I have way more respect for an individual who works with, let's say, a sedentary, morbidly obese individual who restores health and life to that person than I do for them taking a beautiful actress and making her like 1% better, you know, allegedly, for the screen. It's just, it is what it is. And look, man, I have friends who have that title and I respect the hell out of them. And they may be very good in other ways that people don't see, the ones at least that I'm friends with. But there's a whole industry out there of people who are just, they train these celebrities for free. And honestly, like, celebrities also change their trainers like they do underwear, you know? And I like to think of myself as more than underwear, you know?
Hell of a life, more than underwear.
More than underwear, man. There's a tagline. We're going to get rid of Raise the Bar, you know?
There you go.
I am underwear. I want to be like a nice pair of, you know, dainty European briefs, you know, something
hot. Something that cradles and supports, right?
Exactly.
So speaking of Hell of Your Life, what was the vision that you had to create what you've currently got right now? Like, obviously you said that you started off in fitness clubs and working as an independent contractor. And what led you to say, you know, I want to make this really cool company that has these cool branches and different arms and business elements to actually get to where you are now? And then what is the vision going forward? What do you see Hell of Your Life doing?
So I think that we probably touched on some of the stuff that I saw that that drove me to making a lot of the decisions that I've made. So one of the things that rubs some folks the wrong way in the industry is that I will only hire coaches. First of all, I hire full time. So I don't have any part time employees or 1099s. That's independent contractors. And I will only hire coaches who possess a master's degree in either exercise science or kinesiology. That's my bare minimum. Now, look, people say, well, you know, and this has happened before. People will say to me, like a trainer will be like, oh, you never hire me. It doesn't mean I don't think you're not good. You may be awesome, but it's just a really, it's an easy way to make sure that I believe I am answering some of the pains of the industry, which is many people who enter it because the threshold is so low. It's easy for me to create, you know, to create this barrier to any of the wrong folks, and there are wrong folks in our industry, just as there are in every industry. To infiltrating, you know. So I know that if someone has invested 6 years of education, and God knows how much in student loans into this career path, that they're so serious about making it here. Number one, it's not a stopgap job until they get their next, you know, acting gig. They really want to do this. And also, I do believe that formal education goes a long way. That doesn't mean that you can't be awesome at this job without going that route. But what I would say is that, I'll put it to you this way. I'm pretty sure in New York State, you can still practice as an attorney if you pass the bar, but you haven't gone to law school. So I could theoretically study for the bar exam, you know, sit for it, pass it, and then I'm an attorney. I can actually practice. I can be a CPA without having taken one accounting class in my life, theoretically. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, if I want, you know, if I'm being represented in a courtroom, I want someone who went through 7 years of school, you know, they're going through their undergrad and then law school and pass the bar. When I get my taxes done, I know that I want someone who's gone to school for that, and then has their, you know, their CPA. I think our industry should really aim to be that way. Again, this is anybody, you know, you've got such a big base of trainers out there, and I just hope that I'm not offending anyone, and instead I'm trying to explain how I'm trying, you know, I'm encouraging everyone to make our industry better, to make ourselves better, to set a higher standard, because, you know, you've even put up, I've seen you make jokes, you know, on Twitter and Facebook, you know, and Instagram about how, you know, in the past someone like said something about your job not being a real job.
Yeah.
So we need to move past that. And the way to move past that is to stop, when we have the folks out there who are still like that Brad Pitt and Burn After Reading, you know, type, you know, how are people going to take us, you know? And I really just, the reason I do that is, it's not to put anybody down or to say that they're not good enough to work here. It's to just set a higher standard so we can all seek to elevate our industry together.
True. I mean, it's something that I think that a lot of people don't quite understand, is that every business sets their standard as far as what they want and what they don't want. I mean, to say that you have to have a master's degree to work at Hal of Your Life isn't to say that you have to have a master's to work in the fitness industry. It's just that that's your standard. And that's what you want to be able to set as the minimum standard to be able to get people coming in. So that was one element, having the right people to come work for you. What other kind of stuff did you want to achieve with Hal of Your Life?
Well, you know, the big thing I think we also did was fitness guaranteed. So, you know, first of all, from a qualitative standpoint, we have our coaches who all have, you know, master's degrees. But then it's like, okay, so they all have master's degrees, you know, so what? And I think that the way that I was able to really reinforce that I'm putting my money where my mouth is was to put my money where my mouth is. And that's through Fitness Guaranteed. So we are the only health club on earth that has a legitimate money-back guarantee on results. There's no fine print. You can see all the details right on our website. There's no, like, you know, there's no special contract that you get, you know, where, like, you need to keep a, I've seen this before, you need to keep a nutrition log, you know, the entire time. And then, you know, if you don't get results and you don't have the log, which people don't even know they need to do, then you don't get your money back. We don't have any of that. The requirements are so simple. We put everybody through this proprietary assessment that we have here called HFIT. We benchmark, certain fitness values for when they first enter. And these are all quantitative, not qualitative. So we look at, movement capacity. We look at strength. We look at cardiopulmonary output. We look at body mass. We look at fat mass and lean mass. We have a hydrostatic tank here. It's actually the only one in New York City, which is pretty cool too. But it's great. You know, so I can find out just how badly that pizza that I've been eating is affecting me. But I actually do sometimes test it where, like, I know that I've put it. It's fun. It's accurate. You know, yeah. Turns out the thing works. But anyway, measuring people in these five areas. And not only holding them accountable, but holding us accountable to improve them in at least three out of those five areas in 90 days. So, like, these are things we can just, we're both looking at the same data sets. And if they haven't improved, I'll write them a check on the spot and give them their money back. So I think that, and that's never happened, you know, and it's been 3 years since we've been doing that. So most people at this point don't even care. They approach us and they're like, yeah, I know you do the fitness guarantees. I don't even care. I know you guys are good, which is really nice. It's nice to know that we have that reputation and that is not even, you know, people say that. I don't think that's about me. I always tell people that I'm the least qualified person here. I don't have a degree in exercise science or kinesiology, but that's why I believe in hiring people who are better than you. So that's another reason why I really wanted to surround myself with just passionate coaches who are incredibly, you know, intelligent. So I think the fitness guarantee thing really just locks it in and ties it all together.
Definitely. And you've got a really cool culture at that gym. I was fortunate enough to film advanced core training there, if anyone's seen that one. The facility is really cool, and you've designed the elements of everything out in a really neat way. What were some of the big things that you wanted to look for when designing the facility in terms of like the user experience?
Yeah, I mean, look, so part of it, aside from, you know, I'm a bare bones guy when it comes to equipment. So I, for the most part, look, machines have their place. I'm just not, I don't want to get into a whole conversation about functional training. Yeah. Anything you do can be functional if done the right way, you know, even, you know, seated biceps curls in a machine, you know, like that actually can be a functional move. So I don't want to have that conversation, but for the most part, I'm a guy who, very much believes in, pardon me, in your barbells, kettlebells, dumbbells, racks, you know, so we have a very sort of stripped down aesthetic, but it's not a style point as much as it is, a philosophical, you know, philosophically informed, you know, decision. The place is built to the way that we actually train people. But then, you know, we're in New York City, and look, you've been here. We took over a former art gallery. You know, got over 7,000 square feet, which is big for New York City. Small and up in your neck of the woods, but big for out here. And you know, we've got these 17-foot ceilings because it was an art gallery. So we lucked out with the space, but you know, the aesthetic itself, we had to make sure that we did tailor it. And I will say this too, as a side point, we had to tailor it for what we knew to be our clientele, which is a lot of high net worth individuals, folks who are high income earners, and they have certain expectations. And for anybody opening a facility in any market, you need to know who your customer is. So I knew that those elements were important because I know who our customer is. If you're opening in a different market, the opposite may be true. Like, you may be better off, save some dough. Don't go overboard with the fancy, you know, equipment and spending a ton of money on a build out, because your market may be perfect for like a more stripped down gym that's, you know, maybe a little even off the beaten path. Like, you know, a buddy of both of ours, Chris Duffin.
Yeah.
This place is a warehouse, man, and it's an awesome warehouse. You know, it just, it's so cool, and it's like, it's just so on brand for him, and it's, you know, I didn't even know if I was in the right place when I went out there. Did you have that experience?
Well, I haven't been to his place yet. I want to, and I think that's on the, that's 2018's goal, is to go down and attend one of the Kabuki Strength seminars. But, well, from what I've seen of it, it's a warehouse, but because they're also a manufacturing facility.
Well, it's a warehouse and manufacturing, like in the middle of nowhere too. Yeah. So like I rolled up, and so like my Uber driver is like, are you sure you want to get out here? Yeah. I was like, I think so.
Yeah.
He's like, let me wait for you, you know, for real. You know, but the thing that's great about that is, so Chris has this awesome place, and it's a place that our customers would never want to set foot in, but it's perfect for him and for what he does. And, you know, I travel all over the country, and I'm so lucky to meet gym owners all over the country. And when they ask me questions about, you know, cause I have a company that also does consulting, and we work with a lot of gym owners. And, when they start talking about their build out budgets, I'm like, dude, you got to cut this in half. You got to make sure you're doing what's right for your market, you know? So, you know, we had to do certain things stylistically that fit our market. A lot of folks out there, I would say less is more.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know if you've been to Joe DeFranco's place when it was in full swing when it was up in New Jersey, but literally middle of nowhere, industrial park in Wyckoff, New Jersey. And he had NFL guys there, WWE guys there. And it's just, the facility that he had fit what he needed to do, which is exactly what any facility should be for the clientele you're looking for. Really cool to be able to see that you're putting that stuff together.
On the equipment end too, is like when people are opening a place, it's like they think they need every specialty bar, and it's like, excuse me, it's nice to have their toys. They are like useful toys, but they're toys. It's nice to have all that stuff, but I don't think you want to have that much upfront expenditure. Wait until you're turning a profit, and then you can start to cherry pick the stuff that you really want to buy.
Yeah, have money in the bank before you take out a loan. I mean, make sure that's one thing I've talked with.
No. That's not the American way, Dean.
Yeah. But that's how the fitness industry goes bankrupt, is when they start taking out big loans and having multiple investors and chewing into their profits, right?
Absolutely. So look, we've seen the big guys take tumbles because of exactly that. You know, they expanded a little too quickly. The real estate, the leases they had were more than they could take on. And because of that, they ended up in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes, like, you know, lease terms change unexpectedly based on just situations that are entirely out of your control. So if you've invested a lot of money and you owe money, and all of a sudden that stream of income dries up or whatever, you got to deal with it. And if you don't have that money sitting in savings, people are going to be hooped. It's not a fun time.
It's true, but I think that's also why, you know, one of the points I actually did Chris's Chris Duffin's podcast a while back. I was honored to be on the first one, and we talked about the business of the fitness industry more so than anything else. And one of the points that I made there that I got just like an incredible amount of feedback on, people hitting me up via email, on Instagram, just sending me messages. They all loved the point that I made. And this isn't just for the fitness industry. It's for any industry that you're in. And it's my sawdust analogy. And the sawdust analogy is, if you were to own a lumber mill, your primary product would be lumber, but you're also going to be producing a ton of sawdust every day. What you see is waste.
Yeah.
If you're smart, you're going to realize that there's a buyer out there for that sawdust, and that sawdust is monetizable. So I think that for anybody also who's opening up a facility, or even if you don't, even if you're an independent trainer out there cutting your teeth, there's sawdust that you're generating. It could be the programming that you're doing. The program you're doing for one person may very well be good for another person. That doesn't mean cookie cutter stuff, but maybe making videos for one client that could be good for other clients that you potentially train online. So this is just one example, but you always have to be looking at what you're doing and what you perceive to be the sawdust. You know, I'm always looking for that, those leverage points. I think they're key. And that's also what's enabled me to open up and start all these other businesses, finding the sawdust, finding these leverages. I mean, right now, I own a group of companies that range from risk management consulting. It's in the sports and fitness sector. Everything I do is in health and wellness, but risk management consulting, gym design and construction, consulting, as I mentioned before, platform partners. We got some really cool stuff going on, working with a number of great dudes out there, like Quinn Hennick, who put together his whole CWC seminar. So we're doing, a lot of neat stuff, but I would have never been able to do that unless I was able to take a step back. And it actually came, I won't digress into the whole story, it came from a period of time where things were kind of tough, and I had to look at, like, all right, if I'm gonna continue to do this, how else can I monetize everything that I'm doing? And that really helped me out, and it sort of changed the way that I look at things completely. And I would encourage any of your listeners to look at their business and think about what that sawdust might be and how they can monetize it, because that will also keep you afloat in the tough times.
Absolutely. I mean, challenge always brings opportunity. It's just a matter of how you look at it and what you're looking for. You've obviously got a whole bunch of different things on the go. So how do you pick a team that would help you to do the kind of stuff that you're doing? Obviously, like, if you're one person, you've only got X number of hours in a week. But if you've got branches of your business going in different directions, you obviously need some help doing it. You talked about the masters as far as your trainers go, but let's say that you're doing something as far as like business development or coaching, consulting, gym build outs, whatever. What kind of things do you look for from the people that you're going to be working with to help you find success in those different venues and avenues?
So you're asking for my hiring criteria?
No, more like what kind of specific skill set do they have, or personality traits, even beyond like formal education or anything like that.
Is that every type of personality will ultimately work, you know, well, aside from assholes.
You can only have one of those in the company, right?
Every other personality type works, whether you're an introvert, an extrovert. It doesn't really matter. A lot of people these days are into Myers-Briggs and DISC profiles. And I think that those are great because they can kind of inform, you know, as a leader or a manager or the head of a company, how you might want to work with certain folks. But I believe that everybody can bring value to the table, and you have to look to how to leverage the way that someone naturally is in order to make them the best at their position. But the way that I really, you know, aside from the actual resume stuff that I look for, what I do is I hire and fire by our core values. And every single company out there should have core values, we have six. But these have to be the things that you live by. If you can't live by them, if you don't do them yourself, they shouldn't be part of your core values, number one. And number two, they have to be things you live by, meaning that you make daily decisions based on these core values. So any type of decision that comes up in the company has to be able to pass through this. So when I'm hiring someone, I actually share the core values with them, and I want them to understand that they're going to be held accountable. So I touched on one of them before. Raise the bar is our first core value. Setting a higher standard for yourself, for others, and for the industry as a whole. You know, our next core value is ownership mentality. It means treating the business as if you are me, as if you are on the owner, as if your money's on the line. I always try to put my staff in that mindset too. Everybody, both executive management, our coaches, administrative staff, I want everybody to have the mindset. Pretend this is your money. Pretend you put in all that hard work just to get to this point that we're at right now. What decision would you make? Ownership mentality is very important. Relentless improvement is something that's very important for us. So I want to find people that are constantly, I ask people how many books they read a month when I interview them. And I want to know that somebody is constantly reading, that they're constantly investing in continuing education, which I think is so important in our industry, attending seminars like yours where they have their minds open to certain strategies that can help them bring value to the relationships they have with their clients and make them think differently. It's very important. I actually subsidize the continuing education that my coaches go through. I find it, you know, to be that important. We also believe here in extreme ownership. Extreme ownership is, I'm spacing on the name of the author of the book, Extreme Ownership. But this was a core value even before that book existed. Pardon me. It's incredibly important to realize that when you're part of a system, you know, to sum it up very quickly, everything is your responsibility, whether you want it or not, not just responsibility, but to be held accountable for it. There's no one here that will pass a dumbbell laying on the floor, for instance, and not pick it up, not put it back in place. Chances are it probably never got left there in the first place, but even if it did, there's no one who doesn't believe that they aren't actually responsible for it. So extreme ownership is incredibly important. We also have another core value, 1 = 3. Every single person that works for me has to be equivalent to 3 people that work somewhere else. And that doesn't mean that they're working 120 hours a week. It means that their productivity is at that level. And productivity is not the same thing as being busy. I think you and I both know that.
Yeah.
Busy does not mean productive. You know, some of the most productive people I know get everything done very quickly. They're efficient and productive. Hmm. But it's a big difference. So 1 = 3. How many did I rattle off there so far?
I think you're at 5 so far.
I'm at 5. So what did I leave out? I'm sorry. Most important one, don't do dominate. No. Okay. And that's very important. I want to see that when something needs to be done, anything, I mean, from getting someone in here to fix something that's broken, you know, so we need to get a bunch of quotes in order to have it fixed, or the action someone takes in their client relationship, that they are taking such overwhelming action that they're not just doing a task, they are dominating the task. Your client's going away for a week, great. Do they have a program every single day for something that they should be doing? that I see as dominating, you know, not just simply saying, oh, try to hit the hotel gym while you're away, you know, or something like that. We're getting quotes. You know, we need one person to fix something. That means reach out to 20 people. Half of them are going to get back to you. Out of those half, maybe you get three or four quotes, and then we're able to make an intelligent and informed decision. But these are the things that we hire and fire by. And these are the things, look, you know, sometimes you have to put someone on a performance improvement plan. Anytime we put someone on a PIP, a performance improvement plan, it always relates back to some type of discordance with our core values and helping them get back to that. You know, so from the time that we hire and during the duration of the time that someone's employed by us, these are incredibly important. So when you ask, the question was, how do I build a team? I look at these six components, and anybody who has these six components is always going to fit in here, no matter what their personality is actually like, aside from being an asshole.
Fair enough. So that's great to be able to hear from a successful business owner, to be able to say, you know, living your core values, that's massive. So for any of the people out there that are listening, even if you're just a person who doesn't work or own a company or anything like that, have your own set of core values and live your life by it. You can't really go wrong.
If you're an independent trainer out there, if you're just, you should have like your three core values. How do you hold yourself as your company? How do you hold yourself as a company? How does that translate to your client relationships? It's very important, especially if you have ambitions of scaling. That becomes your DNA. And in order to replicate anything in life, you need DNA. That's the basis of all life, you know? So I would really encourage, it sounds corny, it sounds like something it sounds like it's a waste of time, but I really do encourage all the trainers out there that, I mean, I was once in your shoes, you know, I know exactly what it's like, and this sounds silly, but I want you to think bigger. Think about not where you're going now, but where you could go, and always plan for that. And I think that really does start with your core values, maybe with a business plan if you want to get a little bit beyond that, but that can become overwhelming. But definitely know who you are. I mean, I have, you know, I've got, you know, a bunch of tattoos, as you know. I mean, some of them are entirely about the way that I live my life, you know? So, you know, I have constant reminders, you know, about that. So, yeah.
Good way to wrap it up.
About that. Cause I'm so passionate about folks in our industry succeeding, you know? Yeah.
So, well, you can't really have success if you haven't tried something and failed at it before. I'm sure you've had failures. I've had failures. Can you give me an example of something that you've tried where you thought, oh, this is going to be amazing, but it turned out being just a complete dud?
No.
You've just been hitting home runs every time you step up to the plate, right?
Like I said, bat 1,000, man. Yeah, everything, it's like I print money. Everything I touch is successful. Yeah, I've had so many failures. Jeez. I don't know. Do we have like 4 hours to go over all of them?
What would be like one or two where you could get good life lessons to people that are listening?
Look, I got to tell you that I've been through the grinder. When I tell you through the grinder, I have been at the point where life has thrown me such curveballs professionally, whether it was having to forfeit my equity when I was a partner in this health club that I helped double the membership if I earned my equity. But in order to leave, I had to forfeit it. And it was a little over $1 million. You know, everybody says earning your first million is the hardest. No, dude, losing your first million is the hardest. That hurts, okay? Yeah. Especially when you don't have like a million to lose. You know, so it's like you're there, you're working every day, you're doing what you're supposed to do, and then it just gets sucked away from you. And talk about emasculating and just demotivating. And it was so incredibly painful. So I've gone through, you know, failures on that front. I lost my lease. I literally had a homeless health club, if you can imagine. So I've got all these members, and there was doing business in New York City is brutal. It's absolutely brutal. We have the Department of Buildings here that is this incredibly nice bureaucracy. I don't know who's going to see this. Yeah. I love the Department of Buildings. yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we got served with a vacate order because of this zoning violation. And I mean, overnight, I lost everything that I had worked for so, or felt like I had lost everything that I worked for. And I got to tell you, that's where, you know, everybody I think resilience is something that's praised a lot these days. Everybody talks about resiliency. And I don't believe in resiliency. I want, as a matter of fact, I want you to stop being resilient. I want you to be relentless.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between the two. A punching bag is resilient. You can hit that punching bag over and over and over, and it will retain form. If you want to be a punching bag in life, go ahead. I'd much rather that you be relentless. A fighter is relentless. A fighter keeps moving forward. A fighter loses and still trains again to fight somebody else, sometimes to fight the same guy that just beat him or her. And that's the mentality that you need to, I want everybody to have, because without that relentlessness, I would not have been able to take these massive leaps forward. So I went from losing my lease to getting a place that's literally like seven times the size. And then also, in the ensuing 3 years, doubling our revenues year over year for three consecutive years, you know.
Wow.
And trust me, it's not because I'm smart. You can testify to that, Dean.
You know what you're doing.
I'm never the smartest guy in the room. You know, look, I have a GED. I never even graduated high school. That's a fact. You know, I got thrown out of high school. I wasn't a good kid. I definitely went through a lot of tough times early on too. I've never been the smartest guy in the room. What I've always been is I've been the most tenacious. And I just believe in just utter, you have to have that commitment to relentlessness. You know, other failures, dude, I went out in 2008. I had this awesome idea for a website. And if you remember 2007, 2008, the economy wasn't exactly great in America. And it was one of those times I think a lot of people were thinking about moving to Canada. And I was really passionate about starting this website, having never been in this industry, you know, in the dot-com world before. And I thought it would be easy peasy. You build it, they come. And I ended up losing tons of money. We went out of business. It was terrible. I was able to rope in some investors. I was not able to return my investors' money. I was just so demoralized. I felt like such a loser and such a failure. And I mean, that was an incredible failure. But I learned. The nice part is I've learned every step of the way. And you know, that's like, I much rather, I call it paying tuition. And my tuition's come at a very heavy cost. It's paying tuition, man. You know, so I went through, you know, these losses and I learned a lot of lessons, probably several hours worth, which I won't obviously do now, just from that one loss that I've carried forward into everything else I do in life. But yeah, I mean, I've been through, you want to keep going?
No.
Personal failures?
Well, no.
And, you know, so the thing, look, the point is too, that like, you know, to put it bluntly, we all go through shit.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing to know. You know, these days, especially going on Instagram or any, you know, social media, everybody's always smiling and like life is awesome. And it's never that way, dude. No one's ever going to look. I'm never going to post a picture on Instagram of me working at my desk at 4 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon after I've been here 6 hours. You know,
yeah.
No one cares. You know, when I'm like miserable, I'm like, I don't even want to be here now. You know,
yeah.
No one posts a picture of themselves, you know, on the couch, you know, feeling miserable because they had a horrible day. You know, we all and I'm so off on a tangent here. I apologize. But
no, it's in line with everything, right?
You understand, though, like we all go through shit, and that's, you know, I recently was down in Nashville and someone made a comment to me and they go, oh, it must be really nice to be you or something. It was like a little snarky.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what part are you talking about? Are you talking about the tumor that almost killed me when I was 14? Are you talking about the six rehabs I had to go through? Are you talking about when I was bankrupt and I had incredible amounts of credit card debt? Are you talking about when I lost the equity from a business that I helped build? Which one are you talking about that it's awesome to be me?
Yeah.
Okay, we all go through stuff. It's what you do with it. You're either going to use it. It's either going to be something that drags you down or it's going to be something that pushes you up. And it's entirely your decision.
Definitely. What's been something that you were kind of reluctant to do that turned into a fairly massive success?
Something I was reluctant to do but turned out to be a massive success. I got to tell you, that's not something I can answer because I'm trying to think like big here, but usually I won't do something unless I believe in it 100%. So for me, in order to make, if you're going to be relentless, you need to know your mission. Mm-hmm. And the way that you know your mission is you need to, number one, you need to identify your outcome. If you can't clearly identify your outcome, your chances for success are zero. Why do you think so many businesses fail in the first year? Yeah. They have no business plan. They have no clue where they're going. You need to identify your outcome. The next thing you need to do is you need to identify three pains that you know you're going to endure in order to achieve that outcome. If you can't list out those three pains and say, I'm in for it, I don't care how much it hurts, I'm in for it. Again, you got to go back, you got to redefine that outcome. So you really need to think deeply, like, all right, I'm going to open a gym. I won't be able to draw a salary for a year. I might need to move into a smaller apartment. I might not be able to even go out to dinner for a little while. You know, whatever it is, I might have to eat cans of tuna. You need to identify what those pains are and hands down say, yes, I'm willing to take that punch right to the nose because I know what I want out of life. The third test is what I call the Galileo test. And for those of you, I'm a closet nerd, by the way. Maybe not so closet sometimes, but I'm a big fan of Galileo. And, you know, Galileo was a heretic in his time because of heliocentrism. He believed that the sun was actually the center of the universe and not Earth, go figure. And turns out it's true, you know. So, but he was... You know, he was declared a heretic by the church and put under house arrest for his beliefs. Like he had such conviction that he was put under house arrest. So I think, and by the way, he wrote two of his greatest works while he was under house arrest. If you want to talk about relentlessness,
yeah,
that's a great example if I've ever heard any. Yeah. And the thing is, with the Galileo test, that means you need to be able to say, here's what I'm going to go do. Even if everybody tells you you're wrong and they laugh at you. When I told people that I was going to become a personal trainer after I just quit my job at a super successful career in entertainment marketing. I was the youngest executive in a marketing agency. I was making a lot of money, like Wall Street money. And I was just sick and tired of my lifestyle. It was terrible. And I wasn't sick, but I felt sick. I didn't feel good and I hated it. And I quit my job, and then I decided that I really wanted to be a trainer. And when I told people that, they thought I was having a nervous breakdown. They laughed at me. They thought I was hysterical, and I didn't care. Mm-hmm. That was my Galileo test. So I would say that in order to be successful at anything, once again, you need to know your mission, and you've got to define your outcome. You got to find out the three pains that are associated with achieving that outcome and know that you're willing to accept them with a hands down yes. And then you got to pass the Galileo test.
Definitely. I love that. There's no hesitancy when it comes to setting a goal. It's either you're all in or you're not in at all. There's no dipping a toe in the water. It's a good way to go, man.
Listen, I'm a big believer, like my little tattoo over here on my forearm of the burning boat, you know, it's underneath there. There's a banner that says do or die, you know, yeah. And that's what, you know, Vikings used to do when they went to war. They literally burned the boats behind them. They had no option other than to win. They had a decisive engagement. They had one outcome, and that was to win. And I believe that living with that type of conviction, which you can only do if you've gone through those three steps that I mentioned before, you know, is the real key to succeeding at anything in life.
Yeah. I mean, the Spartans always said, come back with your shield or on it. I mean, you either come back as a victor or you are dead. That's it.
I didn't hear that one before, but I love that one too. I guess it's time for another tattoo.
Yeah, there you go. You just got to get a big Spartan warrior with a shield, right?
I got to grow a third arm, I think, at this point in time. I'm running out of space.
Maybe a leg tattoo or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Lower, right?
The male tramp stamp, right? Cool. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but this has been an awesome, awesome chat. I'm very glad that we were able to finally connect with this. Very uplifting and inspiring. Hopefully everyone who's listening has a good kick in the butt to go tackle their day. Where can people find you if they want to hear more from you or see more of the stuff you're up to?
Well, before I even tell people where they can find me, I mean, Dean, it's uplifting and inspiring because I also have people out there like you who inspire me. You know, like I see what you're doing out there and it drives me to, you know, once again, raise the bar. And I think that you set such an incredible example in terms of, you know, content that you put out there, your professionalism, your delivery and your seminars. I mean, I'm saying all this stuff not because I'm your friend, but because you are emblematic of what someone in this industry should be doing. So I want to actually thank you for uplifting me more than you could probably even know. In terms of finding me, you can find me if you're ever in New York City, 212 East 57th Street, Halaby Life. We're actually opening a bunch more locations, but for right now, this is our New York City flagship. So it's 212 East 57th Street. Online, jeffhalaby.com if you want to shoot me a note. Then of course, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, blah, 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 blah. But, I actually do answer, direct messages and stuff that I get, people hit me up all the time on Instagram. So I do respond to those. I used to do video responses, but I just have become so lazy, but I do respond to them. So if you have a question or there's some, you know, you have any type of feedback, like, you know, you think I'm an idiot. Feel free to let me know.
I don't think you're going to be hearing too many of that from people who've been listening to this. But again, thank you very much for joining in. And hopefully everyone who's listening got a lot out of this.
My pleasure, brother.